What does it mean to truly know and to be oneself? The most natural thing in the world, it seems, and at the same time, so incredibly complicated. I actually began to realize I wasn't my true self when I was in my 30s and already a mother of three, when my therapist asked me one simple question. But what do you really want? What do you, Nina, really want? I didn't have an answer to this simple question. It was, however, the start of the realization that I was living a life according to what others expected from me. That my own wishes and desires were not important enough to listen to, as long as everybody else was happy. They call this coping mechanism fawning. Consistently abandoning your own needs to serve others, to avoid conflict, criticism, or disapproval. Fawn types seek safety by merging with the wishes, needs, and demands of others. All this time, thinking that this was the actual me, once I dropped the masks and dove deep into my own psyche, slowly but thoroughly, I came to understand what really belonged to me and what was part of the good girl role I learned to play. What picture perfect was I living by and what patterns didn't really suit my true self anymore? Becoming a mother is perhaps the most important driving force behind all of the above. It is now, being a mother, that I want to heal myself more than ever. Not tomorrow, but now. For the first years of motherhood, I was totally identified with the role of the mother. I was the mother, and only the mother. But now in this process of getting to know myself, I came to realize that I am, and always will be, a woman in the first place. A woman playing the role of the mother. This profound insight actually makes me a better mother. Putting myself first is perhaps the greatest gift I can give my children. To know myself, to acknowledge myself, and to live my life according to the most authentic version of myself. To really follow my heart and heartfelt desires. Because this is also what I want my children to do, all grown up later in their lives. So how do we embrace our own truth and look at parenthood with all its challenges as a tool for healing and self-development, but also simultaneously empowering our children? There's only one person in the world who can answer these questions, in my opinion, and that is Dr. Shefali. With a doctorate in clinical psychology, she specializes in the integration of Western psychology and Eastern philosophy. She's the number one expert in family dynamics and personal development, and a well-known guest on the shows of Dr. Phil and Oprah. To me, her book, A Radical Awakening, is the book with the most profound impact on my life so far. Now, her latest book, The Parenting Map, is available on Amazon, and later in August, the Dutch version will come out. I'm so honored that she's a guest in my podcast today. So, Dr. Shefali, I'm so honored and happy to have you here, that you found a moment in your busy schedule, as we just chatted about, to talk with us and to tell and share your wisdom with our Dutch listeners. So let's just dive in directly. I read your book, A Radical Awakening, and this has really been a life changer for me at the moment in the midst of huge personal transformations. And actually, one of the biggest realizations from this book was that I was living a life according to a picture perfect that I created in my mind. So I was wondering your take on why it's so difficult nowadays for us women to be ourselves or to actually know ourselves, as we are tending to wearing so many different masks.
Well, I think, you know, girls in our biology and our wiring are so connected. We are wired to connect much more than the male biology allows. Mm-hmm. So the female biology sets up a psychology that just has connection as the focus. Then you take culture, and culture likes to have women connect because it's to their advantage. But then we go to an extreme with that. Like, culture robs us of our ability to connect to ourselves, and so endorses the good girl, the giving girl, the perfect girl, that the girl who naturally wants to love and connect, now she loses herself because culture endorses her and kind of forces her to put others before her. So it's very easy for a young girl growing up to have the conditioning that others come before her. And in that, she literally vaporizes to herself. You know, and we're seeing it today with social media, young girls are suffering way more because their identity is created through connection and comparison, really, through others. So now they are in this ocean of eternal comparison with other people, and they're losing themselves. And they're like, oh, I should be like that. Oh, I should be like that. And so culture is really harder, I think, on the young female. And so when she eventually grows up to be a woman, she gets more influenced by the messages of connection because she naturally connects. But now she's going to an extreme where she loses herself in that connection.
Mm. So you say she naturally connects to others instead of connecting to herself at the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah. And how, I mean, what is that connecting to yourself? What does that mean as a woman, as a grown-up woman now? How can you then determine, like, what am I connected to externally? And, okay, what is this inner connection then?
Yes, an inner connection really starts in childhood. And where the parent, and it's for boys and girls, where the parent dethrones themselves from this pedestal and crown of hierarchical dominance and enters into an allyship with their children, where they are their allies. So they keep focusing back on the child's inner knowing. But most of us were raised with parents, and we are parents, who are thirsty for superior control. So control, it shouldn't be called parenting, it should be called controlling. We just control our children. So when we control, and you have that little girl who's so eager to please and be kind and be loving and get worth and validation because she's so lovely. Now control and that need to please creates this inner lack of connection. So the parent, the conscious parent, which I talk about, and it's all in my new book, The Parenting Map, it's going to come out in Dutch. The conscious parent is aware that their goal is always to put the focus back on the child. Okay, what do you think? And to teach the child that they have an inner knowing that is very important to have space in the world. We may not listen to everything, but can we at least allow it to exist?
Yeah.
And just creating that space for your child that your voice matters and it needs to exist will create that inner connection. So inner connection is inner knowing, is inner trust, is inner direction, inner awareness, all of that gets quote unquote created by a conscious parent.
Wow. And where is then the, like the, because when you say that you make room for your kid and stop being the authoritarian, you know, the one standing on a pedestal, and also being then on the other side, not boundless or not letting your child control everything. Yeah. So where is that fine line?
Oh, there's a huge distinction. It's not either or. So just because you get off the pedestal, every parent gets scared. Oh, now this woman is sending me to the gutter. It's like either I'm on top or I'm losing. It's win or lose. But that's not true. There's a whole middle ground, which is called connected partnership. You and your children are partners, and they only really need you as a partner because they're smaller than you. They actually don't even need you as a partner once they're older and they can be more in their lives. Poor children, you know. You know, we are always looking at them as if they are our ownership and our puppets. And we're so afraid to take the foot off the pedal because we think then we're going to crash and burn. But what I teach is that there's a whole middle ground called conscious connection. But that can only occur when the parent realizes the value of allowing a child to flourish in who they are versus become who the parent wants them to be. And that's why a radical awakening is so necessary in our lives later on, because we were never given that voice to safely express our inner knowing at a young age. And again, it's not that the parent blindly follows the child. It's that the parent allows the child to have a big voice. And then the two voices together can figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, one example. My oldest daughter, she's 6 years old, and she's really good at taking her place, kind of a fierce little girl with a lot of emotions. So her emotions go from 1 to 100. She's, you know, talking really loud, sometimes yelling, being really emotional over a small thing. How do I react then as a parent? Because my first feeling is I have to tell her that she shouldn't be so over emotional in a certain situation. And on the other hand, I think, oh, but maybe I'm not allowing her to be herself then.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. So, of course, we don't want our children to hurt themselves or hurt other people. So take that out. If that's occurring, then you need to intervene. You need to be more present in your body, hold her. So if it's just emotional outburst, you're going to, it's really hard because my daughter was the same. And I remember getting so angry with her anger that I wanted to put a, I was like, this girl is like rowdy. She's, I used to think to myself and make judgments all the time. Oh my goodness, something's wrong with my kid. What the hell? I've raised an emotionally unstable lunatic. Like she's a lunatic.
Very related.
Lunatic. Right? I still have so many judgments in my mind. I still do because she's still a lunatic, right? Mm. So I'm still having judgments. But the only, so whenever I had a judgment, and we parents first make judgments, and I teach parents in this book how to not make judgments, because the judgment leads us to a sense of righteousness and then justification for us being lunatics, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
How to talk to a lunatic? You have to go crazy too. Now you've justified it because she's a lunatic, right? But here's where we go wrong. I don't know whether you notice, but the moment you become a lunatic, it becomes worse.
Worse.
And then you suffer the guilt for 2 days because now you've destroyed their self-esteem. Now they're really hurt. You know, now this is the way to reframe it. And we have to train ourselves to do it. It doesn't come naturally because such children, they are frustrating. They are like strong-willed. Everything is a bloody emotional drama, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, can you just shut up and listen?
And is it probably because you and I, me as well, we didn't do that in our childhood?
100%.
That is exactly. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to get into. The reason this is happening even more in our psychology is because we're like, what the hell? I was such a good girl. I am such a good girl. I just bloody listen. And this child is daring to have an attitude about everything. So because we suppressed it in ourselves and we actually were told it was a bad part of us, so that's why we shoved it into the shadow, when we see it showing up, we're like, hell to the no, this is bad. So we become our mothers, we become the culture that told us it was bad. Now we're telling it, the kid, that it's bad. But second, we were never allowed to be strong-willed, right? We were never allowed to know ourselves. That's why such a girl threatens us, because in our model of a good girl was who we were, even though we're trying to change. And I wrote the book A Radical Awakening, and you read the book A Radical Awakening. We are like, we still think that we shouldn't be radically awakened at 6. Okay. So, but that just shows us how we're still limited and we're still conditional. And we need to reframe it as, wow, she is bloody strong-willed. I never was. I can make a choice right now to either get threatened by it or I can choose to just allow it. Doesn't mean I give in. It just means I don't get threatened. I think to myself when she's screaming, she's just expressing. She doesn't have the skills to express it calmly, but it's good that she's just dumping. You know, you and I didn't dump outside, we dumped inside. So we just cut off from our emotional express. We never expressed, right? We were always smiling and always so lovely. Yeah. So what an amazing thing that she thinks she's so powerful that she can just dump. So if you can just stay on the side of, wow, I was never allowed to dump. And look, whatever we developed, we didn't talk, we didn't say no enough. We had eating disorders. We were pushing ourselves. We were trying to be perfect. We're still hard on ourselves. How can I let her just dump and look at it as a dump and then it's going to be done, right? No one goes to the bathroom forever. She's just taking a dump. So we just look at it like that, leave the room if we're getting threatened, and then come back. And literally, it's like with my daughter, who sounds like your daughter, it was literally like clouds passing.
Yeah.
But then they pass, and then they're just normal, sweet children again, and
And then you're
you're sitting there battered, like you feel you've been battered, right?
And because they're like so quickly into normal again, you even you put it on top, like, okay, they are lunatics, you know, because from
They're
one
lunatics.
emotion to super happy again suddenly, it's like, but I totally understand what you mean.
Correct. But look what we're doing, right? Because we're so scared of big emotions, it traumatizes us. Like we're literally battered. We feel abused because we've so identified with that being bad. So it's really about what's happening inside us. Then when their mood passes and they're all sweet again, you literally feel you're in an abusive relationship. Like, what the hell, you know? But they didn't mean to abuse us. We perceived it as abuse, you know, because we have been so looking at that behavior as bad in us. Now, I'm not saying you should allow this when your partner acts like that, but she's 6 years old. And let me tell you, my daughter was, I mean, I literally had to hide. I felt I had to hide under the bed because I was so traumatized by big emotions. But then as I learned to handle it, I would just distance myself. It would pass. And I would literally, like her, act like it didn't happen because it was just an expression. But I was so scared of these expressions that I put so much meaning onto them. And then I felt like a failure. Don't you feel like you're raising a lunatic, so therefore you're not good enough either, right?
Well, yeah, and especially because I think that I have to do something about it. Like that I have to teach her what is a normal way to react. I have to teach her this is how you have to talk, not whine. So maybe I have to stop thinking that I have to teach so much and just maybe be more of an observer. And but is there like after she was so is so mad, is there like a conversation needed about how to express your emotions in maybe a more practical way? Or is it just about, okay, she's 6 years, this is her way, let her express it in this way?
Yeah, great question. So in the moment, we have to learn, don't touch the beast, right? Don't poke the bear. Just let them finish. Okay, but they will come at you, right? Because they've been used to getting a reaction. So you can just say, I'm listening. I'm listening. I'm trying to understand. If they ask you for a reaction, don't give in. Then when it's over, you know, and you can have lots of practical strategies when they're going crazy. You can say you have a bad tummy and go to the bathroom. You know, get space, take space. Now she's six, you can take space. That's the beauty of them growing up. Take space. After the clouds are all done with, later on, you can go, you know, I want to do a role play. I do a lot of role plays with parents and I teach them. You and the child can do a role play where you can become who the child was, not directly imitating them, but kind of, and make them the mommy. And then, you know, then you become the mom, she becomes the mom, and y'all can talk about how can we handle big feelings. But that becomes the teaching moment in a playful, practical way after the storm. In the storm, this is for every kid, every human, every life form that can talk and tantrum, do not intervene in that moment and tell them it's bad. If you say, what's wrong with you? Oh, you know, you must be on your period,
You have to
right?
stop.
When we get that from men, we hate it. Don't do it in the moment. In the moment, you have to just release expectations, release judgment, take space. It'll pass. It'll pass.
I find it very interesting also your view on parenting. Like what's in it for us? That's also the conscious parent, but also now in the parenting map. It's about how can we use parenthood to transform ourselves while also empowering our children. But so I think in our minds, we tend to think, okay, parenting is about the other, is about the child, but it's so much about ourselves, right? So
Correct.
what is maybe the most profound insights about how we can view parenting and the
Beautiful
role we selves
question.
play in it?
Beautiful question. So it is about parenting ourselves. So in that moment, when your kid is like raging or acting like a lunatic that you think she is, or they're getting a C grade, or they're going through a heartbreak, whatever they are going through, That, if it triggers us, is our opportunity to parent ourselves. Because the only reason we're getting triggered to the point of wanting to pull our hair out is because something deep within us is activated. And it's typically because it's a part in us that we have not yet resolved. We have not yet come to terms with. And, you know, for example, I had a client who is a brown woman, and her kid was teased for being brown by a white person. And the kid is just expressing herself, but the mom lost her shit. She yelled at the kid, "You need to stand up for yourself. You need to defend yourself. You need to have pride in that you're brown." And the poor kid was just like, didn't even know issues around race or skin color. And then when I processed it with the mom in therapy, we came to realize how this was a part in her that was not yet parented, that was still wounded, you know, because she never stood up to the teasing. She never could have a voice, that she so wanted her kid to stand up for herself that she actually made the kid so scared and she disconnected from the kid, right? So every opportunity, though, is with our children when we are triggered, is to ask, how can I, in this moment, look at what's coming up as a reflection of a part of me that is not integrated, that hasn't grown up? That's why I say conscious parenting is for the parent to grow themselves up.
Yeah. Yeah. We think we are grown up when we are parents, but the opposite is true. It's funny. I just came from my psychologist and we did a really interesting practice where I closed my eyes and I went to this little girl, the Nina of 3 years old, where I experienced things that I couldn't express myself. And then it brought me back to yesterday where my middle daughter was like raging because she didn't want to put on her socks. And these socks were wrong, those socks were wrong. And I just flipped. I got so mad. I said, "Oh, what is your problem with the socks?" You know, I took them off and put them on again and really was the worst person. But then I realized like, oh my God, she's acting out now what I was supposed to do, but didn't do as this little 4-year-old, 3-year-old child. And now I'm suddenly like seeing literally like, okay, this that triggered me was because I wasn't in contact, or I had to be in contact with this inner child of myself. And it was this revelation just like a half an hour before our conversation started. So it's beautiful.
But here's the thing. And I have my whole section 2 of this book is about the parent healing themselves. And I give you strategies. It's like literally therapy in section 2. But let me tell you something very important that you said. And many parents say, you know, my kid is acting out and acting like a lunatic over rubbish, over socks, over carrots, over pennies. But guess what? Of course, that's all they're going to act out on because they don't have mortgages. They don't have marriages. They don't have annoying partners. So to us, that looks like, are you kidding me? You're going to have a fight with me over a sock?
Yeah.
But understand, that's their only little world. It's like they're having an attitude about, you know, taking a college course and you're forcing them to be something they don't want to be.
Yeah.
For them, but in their world, the sock is their way to assert themselves. We're thinking as adults, are you bloody kidding me? Go pay some rent and then come and cry, or go get married, then come and cry. But that's not fair because we're putting our adult expectation on the child to have, what we're saying to the child is only have emotions around adult things. Only have emotions around life and death issues. Please don't bother me around your silly issues. But all their issues for an adult are silly, no? I mean, they're children, they're so small. Yeah. So their view of the world is from this little place of shoes and clips. And, you know, my daughter used to lose her shit over me putting the toothbrush from one place to the next place in her bathroom. Why? Oh, yeah. So in my head, I'm like, are you seriously kidding me? It's just a toothbrush. But for her, it's like for us taking a diamond ring and putting it somewhere else. Why did you touch my vase? Why did you touch my painting? But for the kid, that's their diamond ring. That's their painting. That's all they have control over. But you know how we parents are. We're so attitude-y that we're like, you know, if it's not important to us, it should not be important to them.
So let's just go back to the whole view of parenting. So it's about parenting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you would like to add on that?
So
like the way we should view parenting?
Yes. So in the moment when you're triggered and your child cries over a sock or a toothbrush, you get to see how you are invalidating your child and calling it ridiculous, giving it a label, being so critical. All the ways that are coming out of your mouth to your child are the ways you are toward yourself when you don't act the way you think you should act. So your child and how you are with your child literally becomes a mirror of how you are with your own self. And what an amazing mirror that is, because all day long we're conditionally labeling our children. Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so smart. Oh, that's so nice. And then when they don't act normal, oh, that's not good. That's so bad. Don't be bad. And then we are so critical to them in our minds. But everything coming out of our mouth is how we are to ourselves. So we get to see how compassionate we are, how forgiving we are, how judgmental we are. Don't you see how judgmental you are once you become a parent? You don't even realize that you're so critical. So because we get to see in real time how we are with our little ones, we get to see how we are with ourselves. And that is the opportunity to reparent ourselves.
Wow. And is there any work to do apart from your children? So you have all these daily moments which you can use as a mirror and a tool to dive inside. Are there things that you can do yourself apart from like the parenting? Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Tell me.
We should be creating an identity that is not the identity of a parent. Similarly, we should create an identity that's not the identity of a wife or of husband or an author, or for your case, a podcaster or someone famous. That is not our identity. Because the minute we put the identity on that, then the object of our identification and ourselves are enmeshed with each other. So if I put the identity of mother, then me and the poor child are now screwed, because I depend on that child. And what a lunatic thing to do, to depend on a child for your identity, because every time they're unhappy, you're going to shake. Every time they're successful, you're going to want that success for yourself or not. It's like going on a weighing machine. How maddening is a weighing machine, right? Mm. Every day, if your identity is the weighing machine, you're in a bad mood a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So you don't want to tie your identity to anything outside. So you need to work on yourself to have your own identity that comes from your own contribution to the world. You like to garden, you like to cook, you like to write. If I, for example, didn't have my therapy practice where I get to help people and be of service, talk to people like you, write books, I'd be screwed. I would then need my child to give me worth and need my partner to give me worth. But I have developed my own sense of worth that is self-sustaining. So if they are good or not good, doesn't really bother me too much. And that's what you want to do in your own life as well.
So really become independent. And it's funny because I had it here as a question that after 7 years of motherhood, actually just now I came to the realization that motherhood, being a mother, is just a role I play. Like, I was so completely, totally identified with being the mother. I was the mother. And even though I had my projects on the side, in my mind, I was completely the mother. And I lost also my will to go out with friends or to do things for myself. And I think that's one of my favorite insights. Like, mothering is a role you play.
It's of the roles you play.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we make it our identity, that's when we become controlling. because it's our PhD project, right? It's our little pet because it's our sense of worth. And we become controlling. We lose control, therefore, because when you're controlling, the flip of it is loss of control. You're always losing control. That's why one of my parenting books, I love the title. It's called Out of Control. Exactly. Because we're controlling out of control, but it takes us into being out of control, right? The moment you want control, right there, you're out of control because you're wanting control. Wanting control is a problem because the reason we want control is because we're out of control. But when you enter the world and you live in the world as having inner control, then the outside person is not the barometer of giving you control. And therefore, you don't go out of control so much because you have inner control. So we need to develop inner control. That's through meditation, mindfulness, self-care, exercise, and having a life that sustains you outside your relationships, outside all relationships.
Yeah, especially in a romantic relationship as well, I can assume. Okay, I have two more questions because time flies talking to you. But the first, let's just dive a little bit more into the parenting map, your step-by-step solutions to consciously create the ultimate parent-child relationship. Yay. Yes, that's enough. I can't wait. And so if you would have to say in a kind of an elevator pitch, what is the most important thing to know about this book, or maybe a top three?
Thank you. So this book is the how-to manual to become a conscious parent. I literally broke it down into 20 steps. It's 20 steps. I wish I could give it in two steps, but these children are, you know, really complex. So 20 steps. If you as a parent want to elevate yourself, start this journey. I wrote it like a journey. Start in step one and work your way through. And let me tell you, there's no parent who will not be fundamentally changed, transformed from this journey. It may take you 20, 30 days. You know, every step may take a good like few days to process. Mm-hmm. I give practice exercises after each step to embed the principles. But this is what we need to do. If you as a parent want to show up the best way and want to quote unquote, create the most resilient, empowered children, you have to go through a process yourself. You know, we don't have to get a degree. We don't have to get a license to be a parent. So no wonder we're doing it so ridiculously unconsciously.
Yeah.
So this book is your manual. Go to school, read it. Yeah. And then in 30 days, you're going to be so different. So I wrote it like a journey. The three stages. Stage one is all about changing your mindset because that's the first place we have to start.
Yeah.
Stage two is getting to know your ego patterns. I describe the different kinds of ego patterns. You can get to see what your ego pattern is and break it. And then stage three is all about how to connect with your children. And I give step-by-step instructions, what to say, how to say it, how to look at your child, everything.
Great. Exactly what I need. Always. And I think in the whole thing, it's also about connecting to yourself, right? Because that's also like always getting this knowledge and thinking that everybody outside has the answers. But I think that is also in your guide, showing you how to connect to yourself and your inner wisdom as a human being, and therefore also making the connection with your child possible.
Correct. So this book teaches you as a parent how to go deep within yourself.
Yeah.
To connect to yourself, like you said. But why is it so important in parenting? Because when you connect with yourself, you've let go of the external noise. Now you can attune with your kid. When you attune with your kid and understand their essence, and there's a whole section in this book to teach you to understand your kid's essence, now you don't need an outside expert to tell you. You and your kid can understand. You and your kid are on the pulse of each other. You have your kid's emotional pulse. You can sense it.
Yeah.
You know, the other day, a parent asked me, do you think my kid is serious? Or do you think my kid is depressed? Or do you think my kid is happy? And I said, you have to figure that out. You have to be so attuned to your kid. You need to know your kid's issues. You know, you need to know when your kid is really unhappy or just tantruming.
Yeah.
You need to know when your kid is lying. I used to always tell my daughter, her face becomes a particular way when she lies. So I never even had to ask her, are you lying? And mm-hmm. I wasn't invested in whether she was telling the truth because I know her essence is good. Anyway, yeah, that's a whole other topic. But I used to just read her face, right?
Yeah.
And I could tell. So for the most part, you're not a truth teller or a psychic, but you need to know your kid kind of well enough to know where they are emotionally. And that takes observation, that takes attunement, and that takes your presence. You don't need your kid to tell you I'm doing good for you to see in their body how they talk to their siblings, how they sing in the shower, how they skip or not, how they are humming to themselves. The kid is always showing you how they're doing. You need to pay attention.
Yeah. And from these 20 steps, what is your absolute maybe favorite or most difficult? You can choose. Which one do you want to share? Your favorite step within the 20 or the most difficult step?
All of them are difficult, depending on your level of insight and self-awareness. But I'll give you a practical one that is also difficult. So it's connected to your example. When our kids are misbehaving, I tell parents to just remember that all misbehavior in children comes from one of three places. Either they are lacking the skill because their brain is literally not developed, and boys may not develop even as fast as girls emotionally. Two, they are lacking the life experience. And three, they are lacking self-worth. So if you understand that developmentally, then you can understand that the behavior is a sign. S-I-G-N, something inside gone negative. So if you can go, okay, this behavior is a sign that they're feeling lack of control. They're feeling not understood. They're feeling like no one pays attention to them. So when your daughter throws a fit around the socks, to her, it's her identity. To her, it's her way of expressing herself in the world. And she wants you to pay attention because she matters. So she's trying to scream at you because maybe you're not listening. Right. Yeah. So instead of getting upset at the behavior, understand what's happening inside. So that's a very key reframe that will help you to not lose your shit and to really stay calm.
Yeah. And to not take it personally. Right. That is also such a big thing. Yeah. Huge thing. Oh, okay. Let me think. One more question. No, I think maybe let's take it back to the woman, because I think being a parent makes it even more important for you as a woman or a father or a husband or as a person to know yourself, right? And maybe you can describe how it feels when you are making this connection to yourself, when you are healing, because I think sometimes it's still difficult for me to know when my ego is really, sometimes, right? I struggle like, okay, is this my ego or is this my inner wisdom speaking? Like when I'm finally making this connection to myself and choosing for myself, how can you be, how can you know that you are on the right path?
Okay, so in A Radical Awakening and in what I teach women, two questions to start with, right? To make it easy. Two questions, but it takes inner connection. It takes looking inside yourself. You have to ask two questions. Am I right now in the future or in the past? Am I in the present? Number one. Mm. And number two, am I coming from fear or abundance? Am I coming from a scarcity place or abundance? That's how you know. If you're in the future and past or scarcity and lack, you are, or fear, you are coming from ego. Ego is talking. Ego is talking, and you're listening. But the minute you're in the present and you're in peace and presence, ego cannot talk. Ego doesn't talk when you're in the present and in presence. Ego talks in the language of future and past, scarcity and fear. So whenever
in the what if,
in the what if, in the what should I have done. And so you have to pay attention to how your body feels, because we're so disconnected that we stay in ego, not realizing it's causing anxiety. So the minute you're anxious, you have to go, whoa, 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 what's going on? What thoughts am I listening to? And realize, ego is telling me I'm not good enough, scarcity. Ego is telling me this should not have happened, past. Ego is telling me, what if this happens, future.
Or what if people will think this and that?
Correct. Ego talks nonsense. It's imagination. Ego is mostly fiction, but we believe it's real because we don't know how to live in the present. So presence will immediately put ego away. The greatest antidote to ego is breathing presence, presence, presence. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It flew by. I could pick your brain for hours and hours, but it's good that this new book is coming.
Yes.
Looking forward
map.
To it. Yeah. The parenting map, and it's coming out. I will, in the show notes of the podcast, I will write down where to order the Dutch version,
I
the Dutch
it.
Translation. Yeah.
And the English
and also,
one,
of course,
they can
on Amazon.
Yeah,
no, yeah, so. Yeah, yeah, definitely, and also your other books. Yeah, maybe any finishing words to empower women on their motherhood journey? I think you already said some empowering words, but
I think the last thing I would say is allow yourself to mess it up because you are messing it up. So just allow it, and it's okay to be imperfect. There is no perfect woman, perfect relationship, perfect family. You know, release yourself from these expectations and just evolve, like grow from it. If you're growing from it, you're going to be okay and your children will be okay.
Are you at a point that you can say, I have grown to the point where I want to be? Or do you still have goals for yourself as a parent, as a woman?
Oh, as a parent, I think I'm okay. I'm kind of steady. But again, I shouldn't talk too much because if something happens to my daughter, I don't know how I'll be. So I'd always want to be humble and aware that the ego is so sneaky. But I think I've trained myself now to see the pain of life as a portal for transformation so much. I've dinned it into my head so much that I've trained the attitude to change. But sometimes the old fear still comes. But you know, it's always a work in progress. So even tomorrow, I could like completely lose it, but I won't be hard on myself. I'll just be like, yeah, because I know how sneaky the ego is. So in this book, The Parenting Map, I help parents forgive themselves, have compassion, and grow.
Yeah, I think that is the most important thing that you said, that this pain, because as parents, we always want to say to our children, we don't want our children to experience pain or negative emotions, but we can, if we're aware, use it as a transformation, and it can be something that makes us fuller and more beautiful, I would say. So thank you so much and good luck with all
thank
the interviews
you,
that you're doing.
You.
And we'll be in touch. Thank you so much.